All right, what's going on? You listen to King Cannibal Jubae podcast. I'd like a big shout out to the fam. We're here once again together. So I'm just very thankful for you guys for being here. Shout out to the fam in the diaspora, in Zimbabwe, in Ethiopia, Nigeria, Cameroon, to the house of in the Bambara fam, to the fam in Sudan, okay, Brazil. Who else we got? LA, okay, New York, Texas. All right. We're here together one more time to get down with the get down. And just this has been a journey. I really appreciate it. I really enjoy it. We got a few more segments before we transition to summer school. So I'm very excited about that. And shoot, summer school is going to be individualized topics. It won't be a book study or a book review or a book haul or whatever you want to call it. But we're going to get to individualized topics that kind of arrested my attention the last couple of months. And so we're going to delve into it. All right, but without wasting you guys' time, let's get down to the business. Let me get my screen together, all those things. All right, here we go. What's going on? One more time. This is the King Cam and Jumbe podcast, and this is the night school segment. And so I'm just very grateful that you guys are with me one more time. Let me see here. All right, we're dealing with chapter nine. The topic is the Builders of the South, part one. It's a pretty heavy chapter, very similar to chapters two and three of the book. And so I figure I'll split this in half for the sake of time. I don't like hijacking people's time and prolonging it. Yeah. So we're dealing with chapter nine, the Builders of the South. Yeah, I thought the Cities of Stone a few podcasts ago, a few shows ago, a few episodes ago was going to deal with that, and it kind of turned a corner. So now we're in Zimbabwe. Finally. All right, so chapter nine, the Builders of the South. Of course, it's an introduction to African history geared just for you, designed to foster a life of learning. We're in this together. We're all learning together. Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, and all those wonderful things. Now, we will be doing this once a week. I know I skipped a few weeks and all that, but it's once a week and to go over a few readings on the continent. Yes, are there any other civilizations in Africa outside of Kemet? Sure is, and we're going to get into it. I think the Lost Cities of Africa is pretty thorough with that. And so this is just the sub-regions of Africa. We are along the southeastern region now. Okay, we traveled throughout Africa. And we're now in the southeastern region. I'm very happy. I'm very excited. We're almost done, but we're in this area right here. All right, of course, the book we're coming out of is Basil Davidson's Lost Cities of Africa. Very good book. It is dated, y'all. It is dated. They talk about Rhodesia. Okay, and so as a state or recognized country, it is not there anymore, but it's still some good information. All right. We look at the meta literature and things like that, and that's very dated. So I think this is okay. All right. So let's recap. What was the greatness of Ethiopian Axum? Check it out. That was from the show last week. Was there a Nile River war? Pretty interesting. Okay. Everything wasn't Hotep and peaceful. They had to throw hands. Was there a Nile River war? You guys tell me. Okay, and Eureka or Ngaruka. All right, and who were the Nzanians? I kind of lightly touched on it. I really didn't lean into it, but we're gonna get it. We're gonna briefly touch on that really quickly. But let's get to it. The Nzanians. Okay, between of course, let me see page 233. Page 233. The Nzanians between the years 500 and 1500 AD. They lived in that area in Ngaruka, okay. But this was a conglomerate of people. It very similar to a lot of major groups in Africa. It was just a large group that came together and fellowshiped and worked in some of the Gala people, the Maasai people, the Somali people. They were pastoral nomads, and they became this, I guess, this unorganized federation called the Anzanians. Okay. They were along the Kenya and the Tanzania area and along the Swahili coast. So they were protectors. They were, they had their own norms and customs and things like that. And so the Bantu-speaking kings of Congo, whom the Portuguese found at the end of the 15th century, were traditionally members. A lot of them were the blacksmiths' mystery group. So they did have a mystery system. It wasn't just in Kemet. It was also in other places. They had these schools of thought where you got trained over the years. You became, you was an apprentice, and then you was, say, a journeyman or whatever, and then you was a master that trained other people. So it wasn't just an isolated situation where it was just like the Kemetic spiritual sciences or the Dogon people in West Africa. These things, these customs were all over our beloved continent. And so it's pretty interesting. Now, let's get down to it. Now, today we're going to identify and discuss the major concepts of the book entitled The Lost Cities of Africa, Chapter 9, and The Builders of the South, Part 1. Now, I'm going to read this real quick. That, according to, let me see, he says, according to David Randall McIver, there has been such a labor expended here as on the building of the pyramids. They put in work in the South. It wasn't just, say, in Egypt and Meroe, where the pyramids were built, and a lot of focus and people were hyper focused on the northeastern area of Africa. It was happening in the southeastern area also. So that's what I want you guys to understand. This was not an isolated situation where one group of people, one empire, was doing all these things. It was multiple empires overlapping, and they were working and striving at different times. But once again, it was not an isolated incident. Okay. So here's some of the essential questions. What was the exceeding great country? How was the great Zimbabwe built? Is there an African replica of King Solomon's Temple? Okay, and last one, was it Africa or Phoenicia? All right, so check it out. All right, what was the exceeding great country? Zimbabwe. Okay, Davidson asserted beyond this country towards the interior lies the great kingdom of Banamatapa. I heard of Manamatapa, but the kingdom of Banamatapa, that's the first time I ever heard of that word. Okay. That's pretty interesting. So when we go in beyond the Swahili coast, Tanzania, into the interior, then we have Banamatapa. The Moors called the people Kafirs, or some people, remember we talked about that, the Arab or African situation. A lot of people look down on them because of how they looked or how they dressed. They were black men, and they go naked, of course, they said save from the waist down. It was too hot to be wearing all that, so they kept their, they kept it modest, but they still had they chest out. You see what I'm saying? So they, some people looked at them and called them heathen type people, and that wasn't cool. I think just because they're different, they have a different language, different customs, does not mean they're a kafir or they're heathen type people. But this was a kingdom. Banamatapa was a kingdom. Okay, what was the ascending great country? They would meet these people, the Europeans and many others would meet emissaries from the far interior. Why? Because they wanted something from them to purchase cotton, camelids, and silk. So silk wasn't only in China. Okay, silk wasn't only in China. It was in Africa, in Zimbabwe. Okay. It was in this area. But before I go into all that, really quick, I don't want to skip anything, but I'll read it in a second, y'all. I'll read it in a second. Vanamatapa among the kingdoms was the most powerful. Okay, it was the most powerful. And it took travelers 15 to 20 days from the coast to get there. Yeah, so it wasn't just a quick road trip down the street or something like that. They took a journey to get there to get these items. Okay. These kingdoms were independent of in and of themselves, self-reliant. They didn't need anything from outside influences or European influence. This was a world that didn't know Europe existed, and they was fine with that. Okay. And they would arrive in a city called Zimbabwe. Okay, Zimbabwe. That was the city, that was the town. Okay. And so most of these ruins that you see are found in a wide segment of the South Central hinterland, including I told you, Rhodesia, the southern fringe of Belgium, Congo. The king of Benabatapa, Barbosa, had told his 16th century audience, is lord of an exceeding great country. This dude here wasn't just a random cat that they just put and they called him a chief. The king of Banamatapa was the guy. He was the Nsut Biti in the south. He was the Mansa Musa of the south. He was that guy. Whoever had that title, king of Banamatapa, was the guy. Okay. And this was a culture. This was a culture. And the people that served him on page, was it 244, served him on bended knee. They bowed and they gave him his food, or bowed and gave him his drink and things like that. This was an organized situation, and these Europeans didn't understand. Right? So, and I just want you guys to understand, the king of Zimbabwe was that guy. Okay? He ran this. This was not an isolated situation where it just was in West Africa and Mali, where Mansa Musa was running it, or in Kemet, where it was happening in the South also. And only time we really think about South Africa is when we talk about the Zulus. Shout out to the Zulus. Love you guys. Chaka Zulu. Love him. But there was other kings in Africa, other queens in Africa. All right? So this was an exceeding great country. Okay, remember the Ethiopian builders, by the way? Okay, after Axum, they still built stone monuments, and they continued the skill of dry stone masonry and spread the knowledge into Central Africa, into Zimbabwe. They handed this information over, passed it down, and of course, these guys would take it in and say, hey, we like this idea. It works for us. And so we're going to roll with that. Hold on. I'm trying to see if you can hear me. All right. I'm just trying to make sure the sound is good. So, yeah. Okay. Trying to make sure the sound is good. I didn't want to. There we go. All right. Now, so they continued the skill of dry stone masonry, spread the knowledge into Central Africa, into Zimbabwe. The art of building in dry stone without mortar was definitely an ancient custom, an African custom. Now, this, the great Zimbabwe, this was an illustration, but think, look at how wonderful it looks, how organized it is. Okay, this is a great Zimbabwe. This land is a group of stone ruins lying along 17 miles southeast of Fort Victoria, a few miles from the main road. Just like the different groups of stones put together, different cultures came together in the South to build this. Okay? Now, but before I move into the other part of this section, these are the kingdoms here overlapping. Yes, we know about Mali, Songhai, and the people, the nations of West Africa, but these are nations here in Southeast Africa that is hardly talked about. We got Mutapa up there, Zimbabwe down here, Mpungwe down here, Tive, Manyika right here. Let me see what else. Shout out to Ruzvi. And so they were all there. Think about this, y'all. This was happening all at the same time. While Mansa Musa and the Ashanti and many others was doing their thing, the Zimbabwe people, Mutapa people was doing theirs down here. Same time. So I want you guys to get an understanding that Africa is vast and it is large and it's powerful. And you guys can still, we all can still rise and take this mantle to the next level. All right, move on. Okay, these were, of course, the kingdoms isolated here. And each one of these groups, Mutapa State, Tora, Great Zimbabwe, Mapela, Biri, Kitive, they were, these kings and queens ruled their area without question. Of course, the Europeans would try to say, oh, they were just chiefs. No, they weren't just chiefs. They were kings and queens of their nation. And I think they need to get their proper respect and their proper due. Because the issue is they will relegate, they will downplay their names and say that, oh, they were just chiefs. No, they weren't. They were kings and queens. Okay? All right. Now, how was this built? The Great Zimbabwe is a group of stone ruins laying, of course, I told you about 17 miles southeast of Fort Victoria. According to Davidson, two of its buildings stand out among the rest, known as the Acropolis. The first was a strong defensive structure, just like this one on the outside here, on the outside there. And the second is known as the Temple. Now, maybe you can kind of tell me the comment section to my section in my fam down there in Zimbabwe. Shout out to the Njumbe fam down in the south. Was this temple another form of rites of passage or spiritual system or a spiritual science? Okay. We're pretty interested. Was this information passed down from one generation to the next in this temple? Was the king crowned in this temple? What do y'all think? Okay. All right. Let's get it. Okay, so how was it built? The building appeared to have sprung from the native craftsmanship and ingenuity of the people. The building came from the people. It was made by the people. It was not foreign influence that came in and gave them their stuff and taught. No. The people built this. Everywhere, these structures are marked with originality, seems to owe nothing to the rest of the world. This is according to Davidson. Zimbabwe, Great Zimbabwe owes the world nothing. We had our own scientists, our own architects, our own great leaders to build these items, to build these places so we can live. All right. Now, the Mana Matapa. Though not Prester John, as we talked about, that cat, I'm telling you, he was elusive. Mana Matapa was a noble and a religious figure, and he was the lord of a state or power. But the reason why I put these together, this was a the great bird at the top. This was the great bird, the very symbolic in Zimbabwe. And down here is Heru. There is a great significance and a great similarity between Heru and the great bird in Mana Patapa. So I just would like to believe, of course, this custom came from the south, moved up north, and but whoever had this symbol, whoever donned this or had this by their house or in their area, it let the people know that this person was the leader, this person was the king. Okay? As I said many times before, Kemetic culture came from the south. All right. Now, is there an African replica of King Solomon's temple? Okay. This is debatable. Shout out to the Lemba people down south. Shout out to them. There's a lot of Jewish African cultures down in the southeastern area. The Lemba people is one of them, and there's some in Ethiopia. But this fortress is on a hill similar to the temple on Mount Moriah. Now, is it line for line, word for word the same? No, come on, y'all. But the bones are there. You kind of see and understand what they was getting at. And remember that the Ethiopians and many others had a lot of interaction with the people of Israel. Okay. So a lot of that was probably brought down when it came down to how they built this building. But that's debatable also because a lot of the customs and culture predates Solomon's Temple. All right. So the Portuguese can't believe that this originally came from the Africans. So they would say, no, it must have came from somebody else like the Phoenicians. But, I'm almost out of time. So let's get to it. Send the question real quick. What was this sitting great country? Okay, that's another one. How was the Great Zimbabwe built? Is there an African replica of King Solomon's Temple? Not exactly, but the bones are there. And was it African or Phoenician? We know it's African. It was not Phoenician or some medieval group that came in and just helped the black people do their thing. Okay, that's what it is. We have to. Even the scientists were saying, "No, this was originally from Africa." Now, what's next? Next week, we will continue to discuss Chapter 9. And for more on East Africa, check out Home Team Sankofa, Pan African Series, Dr. Ben, Dr. John Henry Clark, the African History page, and AE Learning, and many others, just to name a few. And some more books. Of course, as an Amazon affiliate, I earn from qualifying purchases, books like The Ancient African Kingdoms by Ancient African Kingdoms and the Great Kingdoms of Africa. So that they're good. Pre-Colonial Black Africa by Sheikh Ntedjo, and The Introduction to African Civilization by John G. Jackson. That is a must read. You got to get in on that. And For Babylon to Timbuktu by Rudolph Windsor is another great book. All right, man, this is some good stuff. I'm very excited. I learn something new almost every week, and I hope you guys are too. But before we go, prayers for peace and unity and stability for our family along the Sahel region, along the Bilateral Sudan and Ethiopia, Congo. Our children in Congo are going through it. And even in our neighborhoods in the United States, we're going through it. Okay. Let's pray for peace and unity and stability for all of our families. All right. And of course, we just got through dealing with Chapter 9 of Builders of the South. You just got to listen to King Cam and Jube podcast. And Jube means message. And today's message is The Builders of the South, part one. Get ready for part two. Much love to Peachy Cam, Events and Designs, Pan-African Bookstore, so many others. Goodness, there's so many great people. The African History Network, shout out to you guys. I'm just very excited. The African History School. Shout out to the Jube fam, every last one of you. You guys are awesome. And I just can't wait. I can't wait to keep it going. And I will talk to you later. Peace.